Today's radio play, Reparation, is based on a most unusual story which will appear in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine distributed with all Hearst Sunday newspapers from coast to coast. Front page dramas are produced in the studios of the General Broadcasting Company. Mrs. Garber, usually neat as a pin apartment, is in chaos. From one end to the other is a web of tracks made by a combination of muddy boots, ashes, dirt, and chemically charged water. Mrs. Garber, who usually has a tantrum if there's a spot of dust showing or a picture slanting on its hook, is strangely calm about the state of her tiny home as she discusses the matter with her crippled grandson, Larry.
Everything's going to be all right, Larry. Soon we have some money. We can get the place fixed up just like it was before.
Oh, but it smells something awful, Grandma. Why can't we have a new place to live?
We'll see, Larry. Burned buildings do smell funny. What with the charred wood and the chemicals and all.
Gee, Grandma, I wish I'd been home. Things might have been different. Maybe the fire wouldn't have happened.
Oh, thank God you weren't home, Larry dear. Well, you might have been burned in your bed. No, grandson. Don't go wasting your wishes on things like that. Save them. And use them all toward getting your legs well and strong.
Do you think they ever will, Grandma?
Oh, I'm sure of it, darling. And someday, when Grandma's ship comes in, maybe if there's any money left from the fire insurance money we're going to get, Grandma's going to send it to a big doctor.
Maybe that's the insurance man.
Well, I hope so. I want to get this mess cleaned up.
Mrs. Garber?
Yes?
I'm Mr. Abbott, claim adjuster for the fire insurance company. I understand you've had a fire here.
Oh, when you come in and look around, you'll understand better.
Oh, say, things are sort of messed up, aren't they?
I haven't touched a thing. Every bit of the place is just what it was after the fireman left it. Larry and me stayed as neighbors for the rest of the night.
Hello, Sonny.
Hello.
And now, Mrs. Garber, just where did the fire start?
In here, sir. A draft from that window must have blown the curtains across the little gas stove.
Hmm, I see. The flames were confined to this one room, though, weren't they?
Yes. But the smoke and water from the hoses and the extinguishers have tracked up every room, Mr. Abbott.
Well, that's too bad, of course, Mrs. Garber. But strictly speaking, the fire only occurred in this room, didn't it?
Yes.
Well, then your claim can only be based on this room.
Oh.
Now, let's see. 40, 75, 100, well, to be perfectly fair, let's call it $150 damages. Now, that's about enough, eh, Mrs. Garber? Now, if you'll just...
$150? Is that all I'm going to get?
Well, that's $50 more than the stuff would be worth.
But my apartment is insured for $500 in case of fire.
That is the maximum named in your policy, Mrs. Garber. You're correct. But the damage done by fire is only $100.
But it isn't fair. How am I going to get new furniture on that?
Oh, come now, Mrs. Garber. I think I've been quite generous in the adjustment of this claim.
Generous?
Well, after all, the fire insurance company depends upon my good judgment and sense of right. And if I allowed you more than $150, I wouldn't be doing my duty. Now, if you give me the initials, I'll fill out
the... Mr. Abbott. I'm a poor widow woman, a grandmother with an invalid boy to support. For 15 years, I've been paying premiums regularly, though God knows how I've managed to sometimes.
Very creditable, I'm sure, Mrs. Garber. Now,
when the very first fire comes along and ruins my little home, a big company worth millions won't give me even enough money to refurnish it. It ain't fair, I tell you, it ain't fair.
What's the matter,
Grandma? Oh, nothing, Larry boy, nothing. Oh, please, Miss Rabbit. Can't you give me any more than $150?
Well, this was a measly fire anyway, Mrs. Garber. Why didn't you have a good one?
Why didn't I have a good one? What do you mean?
You're a poor woman, but you're smart. A smart woman oughtn't to be poor. I can tell you how to get some real money for a fire.
You can? How?
Close that door so the kid can't hear, and I'll tell you.
Excuse me.
Oh, come right in, Mrs. Garber. You may go, Miss Danzy. You can finish that later. Sit down, Miss Garber.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Now, I've got the $500 check here for your second fire in your apartment. You certainly have tough luck with two fires in as many weeks.
Yes, sir.
Say, it was a slick job. Nothing left in the place.
I did just what you told me, Mr. Abbott. How can I ever thank you?
Don't thank me. Let me thank you.
What for?
For being such a good pupil. How would you like to earn this much money a few times a year?
Oh, say, you aren't kidding me, because I'm an old woman.
Well, you see, Mrs. Garber, the insurance people pay me to be honest in adjusting claims. But it's hardly enough to live on. I'm forced to do extra jobs to make more money.
Yes? How do you make it?
by arranging fires for which the claims are paid.
The way you did mine?
Yes, but you're the first one to get the entire settlement amount, you understand?
I think I do.
The first time I met you, I sized you up as a pretty smart woman. But to make sure, I gave you instructions for touching off your own apartment. And you've come through in great style. What do you say to becoming my assistant?
You want me to set fire to other people's homes?
Homes and stores? What do you say?
No. That's against the law. You can be sent to prison.
Don't forget, you're already guilty of arson.
Oh, so I am. Oh, Mr. Abbott, you won't give me over to the police.
Not if you come in with me. Remember your grandson.
Oh, poor little Larry. He needs me. He needs an operation. And that's going to take a lot of money.
Well, you can soon make enough for that working with me.
All right. I'll do it. I'd do anything to give Larry his chance to be like other boys.
Good. I knew I could count on you, Mrs. Garber. Here's your check. We'll start right away stirring up some new business.
Rubenstein Clothing Emporium. Reinhard Rubenstein speaking. Yes. Yes. Yes, I know it. I'm very sorry, Mr. Cowell, but I can't take care of that today. Well, I'll try next week. Yes, positively, yes. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Culver. Yes, sir. Now, what can I do for you?
Mr. Rubenstein?
Yes, sure.
There's a little matter I'd like to take up with you.
Listen, mister, if you want to sell me something, I ain't got no money to buy it. If you're here to collect for something, I ain't got no money to pay for it. So help me, that's the truth. Just now, Eddie, I gave my word to pay a man $200 next week. Where I'm going to get it, maybe you can tell me.
Maybe I can.
What?
Are we alone? Can I speak freely?
Yes, yeah, sure. Why not?
Your store is insured against fire, I believe.
Yes. How did you know?
Never mind that now. You've never had a fire, have you?
No, not even a blaze I don't have. And that fellow down the street has one regularly every 6 months. Such a lucky fellow, that.
If you had a fire here, you'd collect how much?
For a total loss, well, $2,000, please God.
And if you should have one, say, tomorrow night, you'd be able to pay off a few debts, eh?
And put up a high-class modern store, not to mention the fire sale, which would run on indefinitely.
How much would it be worth to you to have a fire, Mr. Blumenstein?
How much would it be worth to me? So what do you mean, Mark?
Listen, Mr. Blumenstein, for 25% of what you collect for it, I can arrange to have a first-class cause-unknown fire here.
25%? A quarter of the whole settlement?
I can guarantee a perfect fire. The person who'll do the job has been touching off places successfully for the past 6 months. You read about the Daniels Furniture Store fire, the Shipley Warehouse blaze.
Yeah, sure, certainly. All of a sudden and mysterious, the paper said.
Well?
But 25% is...
25%, and cheap enough for a good job.
It'll be a real fire, not just some smudge and smoke.
You just leave that to me and my assistant, Mr. Blumenstein. And I'm telling you, you'd better take any papers or records home with you, because when it's all over, you'll only recognize this place by the buildings across the street.
All right. I'll give you 25%.
Great. Now, I'll make all the arrangements, and tomorrow night...
Grandma?
Yes, Larry boy?
You going out again tonight?
Yes. But it'll be the last night I'll have to leave you alone, dear. Grandma won't be going out anymore like this. And she'll have enough money to get those legs of yours all fixed up. Won't that be fine?
Oh, yes. Grandma?
Yes?
Can I go to Mickey's tonight to see his Christmas tree?
Oh, I don't see how, Larry. I'm going away on business in a minute or two, and I can't take you anyplace first.
Oh, you don't have to take me. Mickey said he'd come by for me and take me himself.
Oh, all right, dear. That'll be fine. I'm glad you won't be lonely while Grandma's busy. Who is Mickey?
He's the boy who delivers for the grocery store. He's awful nice and as strong as anything. He can carry me around like nothing at all.
Well, that's fine. I'm a fool now.
Be sure and leave me a note telling me where you're going, and I'll come and get you and bring you home.
All right, Grandma. Ain't you going to kiss me goodbye?
Oh, of course, darling. Be a good boy.
I will. Goodbye. Oh, Grandma, where are you going with that can of gasoline?
Delivering it someplace, dear.
Come right in, Mr. Abbott.
I wanted to know how everything went.
As far as my job went, there wasn't a hitch.
Good.
I let myself in with the key you gave me. Here it is, by the way. I shan't need it anymore. And I waited until everything was closed up and the street quiet. I heard someone going upstairs to the apartment above the emporium, but in a few minutes they came down and went out. Then I spread the wads of newspaper and excelsior and lit the torch and walked out.
Swell. I couldn't have done better myself.
Oh, here's a note Larry left for me. He was being taken out for the evening.
Yeah, the sky is beginning to get red over there toward Walker Street, and the apparatus is still going that way, and you must have done a great job on it.
Oh, no. Larry.
Well, what's the matter? You look as if you were going to faint.
Oh, Mr. Abbott. Larry is in that apartment over the clothing emporium.
My stars, no.
He says here, he's at Mickey's, over Blumenstein's clothing emporium on Walker Street. Oh, quick, Mr. Abbott, I've got to save him.
The kid's probably not up there at all. You said yourself you heard somebody come downstairs and go out.
I know, but they came down faster than they went up. Larry's still up there, I tell you.
This is terrible. This is awful.
Well, what's the matter, Mr. Blumenstein? I thought you wanted a good fire.
You say there's a little crippled boy upstairs there.
Larry! Oh, my God! Larry is up there!
Now, take it easy, Mrs. Garber.
The boy that lives upstairs took the kid to see the Christmas tree. I had to go out for a few minutes. When he came back, the whole place was blazing.
Somebody's got to save Larry. They've got to.
Nobody can go in that building and live, lady.
Fireman! Oh, Mr. Fireman!
What is it, lady?
Oh, you've got to save my Larry. He's up in that apartment.
There's not a chance, lady. The place is a roaring furnace. All we can do is to save the rest of the building.
Oh, it's all my fault. My fault.
Now. You don't know what you're saying, Mrs. Garber. Now, let me take you home.
Oh, home. What is there to go home to? All I had to live for is in that fire. I might as well be there, too. Larry,
get me coming. Stop that woman. Don't let her go either.
Let her go. You heard me.
No, fireman, stop her.
You. Didn't you hear her say that all she had to live for was in there?
Yes, but...
Now I won't have to split that 25%.
Be sure to read the story of a woman firebug when it appears in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine distributed with all Hearst's Sunday newspapers from coast to coast. It will appear in an article entitled Confessions of the Firebug Gang. This is Wentworth announcing and turning the microphone over to your own announcer. The Alibi Maker is based on a most unusual story which will appear in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine distributed with all Hearst's Sunday newspapers from coast to coast. Front page dramas are produced in the studios of the General Broadcasting Company. Three men stand grouped around a silk-covered bed.
She's dead, all right, Fertillon.
Yes, Ashton Wolf. Her distorted features are blue. That is caused by carbon dioxide poisoning.
How long would you say Madame Poudre has been dead, Doctor?
As near as I can tell, Mr. Ashton Wolf. Death occurred about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Just come here, Ashton Wolf.
Oh, yes, Fertillon.
Examine these bolts. They look queer to me. If I only had a screwdriver.
Here you are.
Thanks. Now we shall see.
What did you find, Bertillon?
I'll tell you as soon as I get a couple of these screws out. Ah, there. Just as I thought. These screws have been recently taken out, oiled, and put back again.
How do you know?
See? These holes are so large that wedges of wood were inserted to get them to grip properly.
By Jove, so they were.
Now, that's decidedly strange.
What is?
If I put these screws back without the little wedges, so, the bolts hold fairly well, and to all appearances are normal. What if the door is unlocked? Here, let me see that key. I thought so. The end is all scratched with some kind of a long-nosed plier gripped it. Let's see. If the key was turned from the outside, watch now.